Welcome to The Complete Works, an official podcast of Filmbook. The Complete Works is a podcast that delves film by film into the filmography of a Hollywood actor, director, writer, or composer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Complete Works podcast of filmography, a podcast brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Doug Hess, and if you're tuning in to the Complete Works podcast for the first time, what I do on this podcast is discuss a specific movie from a film actor, actress, director, or composer's filmography. I am currently working my way through the Christopher Nolan's filmography, and in this episode of the Complete Works podcast, I am going to be discussing the film Interstellar from 2014. Find out more information about the Complete Works podcast episode on Filmbook. That is film-book.com. You can simply use the search term, The Complete Works. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or another podcast service, please rate, review each of these episodes. If you're listening to this podcast on YouTube, please like our video, subscribe, and consider becoming one of patrons on a patron at patreon.com/filmbook. Your help supports us create more engaging content here on Filmbook. And so, like I said, in this episode, we're going to be talking about Christopher Nolan's film Interstellar from 2014. It's a very well-written, directed, and acted film. The other thing that I would say about this movie before we jump into it is this is a film that, I'll be completely honest with you, it's well done in every aspect of it, but it's one that I had to watch a couple times, to be honest with you, because it's so deep, it's well done, there's a lot of science in it that I didn't necessarily understand. And every time I watch the movie, I find something a little educational, and I really fine-tune my understanding of the film. So that's not a knock on the film at all. I think it really speaks to the volume of how well it was written and directed and acted in terms of this. Some of the stars that's in Interstellar is Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, John Lithgow, Michael Caine's in it. Matt Damon is another actor that's in there. So a lot of stars that are in this film. It was directed by Christopher Nolan, and it was also written by Christopher and his brother, Jonathan Nolan. Really a well-done film. First of all, let's kind of jump into what is the storyline? What is Interstellar about? It's really regarding Earth's future. So Earth in the movie has been hit with a lot of disasters, from famines to droughts, etc. A lot of things have hit the Earth, and there's really only one way to ensure mankind's survival, and that is through interstellar travel. What does this mean? It's a newly discovered wormhole in the far reaches of our solar system, which allows a team of astronauts to go where nobody or no man has gone before. And it's a way that the planet may have just the right environment to be able to sustain human life moving forward with all these disasters. It's a film that really makes you think. It's a film that, like I said, is well written, directed, and acted with. And it's really a film that makes you think. So I've kind of come up with about, I don't know, 6 questions or so that I want to talk about that I think really helps explain a little bit more of this film. So what is the main message of Interstellar? Well, at its very core, this is a movie basically about humanity being able to survive and making sacrifices in order to survive. It's also about how pioneers are willing to lay down their own life in order to better others, sacrifice themselves for others. I kind of thought about this and was reflecting on how I could relate it to maybe a little bit of history. And, you know, years and years ago in the early 1800s, people were moving west. They were going into the unknown. You know, have your William and Lewis and Clark adventure, trying to explore in a territory that has not been seen by humans before, at least humans that were from the East Coast. There was Native Americans out there, but basically it was an uncharted territory and going out there to see what they could find out there. So to me, that's the main message of Interstellar. Why is there interest in it? I think a lot of it has to do because of the science is so accurate. And that's one thing that we'll talk about here in just a little bit regarding trivia, that the scientists, that's one of the things that they basically demanded when they were writing this film and helping produce it, is making sure that the science was accurate. That helps with this film. It's believable because everything that they're talking about in the film and showing you is real. And it's not far-fetched. It's not something that you have to wonder, well, will this ever happen? Or that's Hollywood at its best. No, it is really talking about something that is happening and is true. So I think that helps. In the film, you see that 23 years passes. Those on Earth age. Those that go through the wormhole in outer space, they don't. And so how is this possible? And this is due to the extreme time delay caused by being within the gravitational pull of a black hole. And so Cooper, who's played by Matthew McConaughey, he watches video messages from home and he finds out that his daughter is now the same age he is when he left Earth. So because he's went through this gravitational pull in the black hole, it basically slows down the aging process while here on Earth, we continue to get older at our normal pace. In space, in the black hole, it kind of slows things down. Another thing that I came up is, where did Cooper go at the end of Interstellar? So when Cooper, played by Matthew McConaughey, is injected from the spacecraft, he is found and returned to a colony of Earth, only to discover that 90 years Earth time has passed since the time he left. However, he has barely aged in the process. So he's gone for 90 years. He barely ages in this whole process. And again, it goes back to the black hole, gravitational pull, etc. So how did Murph save the world? His daughter, as an adult, Murph uses the quantum data from the watch to solve the gravitational equation. She is able to understand how to harness gravity and how to control it. As a result, humanity then is able to leave Earth in vast numbers and be able to take what we have here on Earth and place it in another atmosphere, if you will, or another place. Is there a twist within the film? Absolutely. All movies, I believe, have a twist. It's really the ending of Interstellar reveals that aliens are humans from a far future who have become five-dimensional beings, and they then help Cooper, who is played by Matthew McConaughey, and Murph save the human race, and therefore they save themselves in the process from constructing the time capsule inside the black hole. So can we sum up this film? Because like I said, I really think it's well done, but it can be kind of confusing and something that you have to really concentrate, or at least I did, in this film. And if I had to basically explain it, when Earth becomes uninhabitable and humanity faces extinction, farmer and ex-astronaut Pilot Cooper, played again by Matthew McConaughey, pilots a ship of scientists and engineers through a wormhole to find a new place for Earth to exist within the galaxy. And so that's really, in a nutshell, Interstellar. Again, acting is wonderful. Special effects are great. Just really a lot of positive things that I could say about this film. So let's talk a little bit about some of the trivia. I was really fascinated by this, and anybody that's listened to The Complete Works before knows that this is kind of a big deal for me, is making sure that we understand some of the trivia. I think that's the great things about film. So let's kind of jump in and talk about some trivia. Tons of trivia for this film. Tons of trivia. We're not going to be able to go through all of it, but I want to hit some of the highlights on this. So as I mentioned earlier, early in production, or pre-production, I should say, Dr. Kemp Thorne laid down two guidelines to strictly follow. One was nothing would violate established physics laws, and that all the wild speculations would spring from science and not from the creative minds of the writers, the screenwriters, which was Jonathan and Christopher Nolan. So when they started this process, they had to accept those terms, because if not, this movie probably wouldn't have been made. Okay, so I thought that was really interesting. According to Dr. Kemp Thorne, the largest degree of creative license in the movies are the clouds of the ice planet, which are structures that probably go beyond the material strength which ice would have been able to support. So it wasn't all based in fact, but for the majority, they were, and they did take a little bit of a unique creative licensing. So in this, Steven Spielberg was attached to direct this movie in 2006, and he actually hired Jonathan Nolan to write the screenplay, but he chose another project instead. Then in 2012, after Spielberg departed, Jonathan suggested that his brother Christopher pick up the mantle or the script and run with it, and he did, and obviously made it into the movie. The method of space travel in this movie is based on Dr. Kemp's work, which were also the basis of the method of space travel in the novel Contact, that was actually adopted to a film in 1997, where Matthew McConaughey starred in that movie as well. And if you've ever seen the movie Contact, another fascinating film that I give that two thumbs up as well. Giant dust clouds were created on location using large fans to blow dust in the air. Hathaway suffered from hyperthermia while filming in Iceland due to the fact that her astronaut suit was open while filming scenes in the icy water. Like Inception in 2010, in the last two Dark Knight movies, Christopher Nolan was focused on many real environments as possible in the filming of this. The wormhole was placed near Saturn as a reference or a salute to the film 2001: A Space Odyssey from 1968. That is originally planned for part of that this movie to take place on. And so it was a shout out, tip of the hat, if you will, to that great film as well. The majority of shots of the robot TARS, T-A-R-S, were not computer generated. Rather, TARS was a practical puppet controlled and voiced on set by Bill Irwin, who was then digitally erased from the movie, and we see TARS there. The wormhole explanation using paper and pen is exactly the same as it appears in Event Horizon from 1997. Christopher Nolan was initially concerned about a scientific accuracy depicting of a black hole, which would not be easily depicted for the common audience. However, he found the finished effect to be explainable, provided that he maintained constant camera perfection. As long as we didn't change the point of view of or the camera position too much, we could get something very understandably in there. Which is interesting, the books have played on the bookshelves, so there's some scenes where the bookshelves are in there. Shows in the movie were actual books Nolan had read and used for his research about black holes, so it was another shout-out, which I think is very interesting. I really think that Christopher Nolan went to great pains to make this film as realistically as he possibly can, even though it's still got a scientific or sci-fi slant to it in terms of that. Christopher Nolan casted Matthew McConaughey after seeing his performance in Mud from 2012. It was an ideal moment for Nolan when they landed Texan native McConaughey for the lead role. I'm thrilled for him right now. I didn't know how much potential he had until I saw that film Mud, not just as a leading man, but in sheer acting talent, that he made those remarks regarding Matthew McConaughey. Many of the IMAX lenses used during the filming were prototypes never seen before, and some last-minute modifications had to be made to some of the lenses just a few days before filming even began. After watching the documentary The Dust Bowl from 2012, Christopher Nolan contacted director Ken Burns. Ken Burns, as many of you know, has done a lot of documentaries on baseball, the Civil War, just really an outstanding documentary, requesting permission to use some of their featured interviews in the film. The apocalyptic Earth setting in the movie is inspired by the Dust Bowl. disaster that took place in the central area of the United States and Canada during the Great Depression that was in the 1930s. Some space sequence were shot at an IMAX camera installed in the nose cone of a Learjet. You'll find a copy of Stephen King's novel, The Stand, is visible along Murphy's, that's Matthew McConaughey's or Cooper's daughter's books. King's book is about the near extinction of humanity and the survival struggle to relocate and settle down. Upon post-production was complete, Matthew McConaughey did not even reveal to the plot of the movie to his wife. Kept it a surprise in terms of that. The shape of the space station is a reference to a clock face, which time being a major theme in the movie, so you have some symbols in there. It was filmed under the fake name Flora's Letter after Christopher Nolan's daughter, Flora. This movie parodizes the story that the moon landing were faked by the government. It is used in the movie as an attempt to quell future generations for space travel. Amazingly, real-life conspiracy theorists claim that Stanley Kubrick, who did 2001 Space Odyssey, actually directed the television footage of the landing by using leftover props from the film 2001 Space Odyssey. Interesting. I think that's kind of weird, but that's all right. In Christopher Nolan's opinion, the score composed by Hans Zimmer is the strongest and most powerful one that he has created so far. To get inspired for real-world space travel, Christopher Nolan invited former astronauts to the set to help out with that. After the crew landed on Miller's planet, just when they were about to get off Ranger 1, the score softens and we can hear ticks, approximately one every 1.5 seconds. Because of this, time is due to the gravitational pull. Even ticks represents approximately 1 day on Earth. So some kind of interesting stuff there. The wormhole shown in the movie near center is exactly the same place shown in Man of Steel in 2013. Which was also produced by Christopher Nolan. Superman, as a child, arrives into our solar system in a spacecraft when it drops out of Ra. The black hole was so scientifically accurate, it took approximately 100 hours to render each frame in the physics and VFX engine, meaning every second on screen took approximately 100 days to render the final copy. Some really just fascinating information on here. Many of the characters' names are found on the books in Murph's room as authors on here. Some of the archive footage interviews were filmed specifically for the production and then altered by the visual effects teams to appear much older than they really were. On April the 10th, 2019, the first photo of a black hole was made public that looked very similar to the black hole that was actually shown in the movie. This film is 2 hours and 47 minutes and 7 seconds. It is the longest IMAX movie that was released as of 2014. The Miller Planet scene was filmed in Iceland, and we told you a few minutes ago that's where Anne Hathaway kind of got hyperthermia. Christopher Nolan earned $20 million and 20% of the gross of the film, and we'll talk about how it did at the box office here in just a few minutes. And if every second equals 1 hour on the water planet, a day expires every 1.5 seconds. So just kind of give you a little reference there. This was Christopher Nolan's first movie since Memento back in 2000, not to be filmed by cinematographer Wally Fizer, who was busy with his own movie that he was directing in his debut. So Christopher Nolan had to go out and hire somebody else. Like I said, just a lot of great information, trivia about this, and unfortunately we can't get to all of it. A. Scott Berg's biography of Charles A. Lindbergh appears on Murph's bookshelf as a salute to the man's early days of flight. The word interstellar is only used once in the movie, and it's at the midpoint of the film. Anne Hathaway's character is named Amelia. This may be a nod to the famous pilot Amelia Earhart, who, like Hathaway's on-screen persona, was a woman who went further than any other person in exploring and flying. Just a lot of great stuff that's out here. Unfortunately, we can't get to everything. This was the first movie directed by Christopher Nolan since Prestige, back in 2006, to feature an opening title card. The spacecraft is not launched until 43 minutes into the film. The only movie of Christopher Nolan which used a different type of main conflict rather than straight confrontation. In this movie, the central conflict is about difficulties of relationships rather than clashing interests. The Endurance spacecraft is designed to resemble a 12-hour clock face, which each of the 12 modules alleged to each 1 hour interval. Really just a lot of great information, film, history, if you will, regarding this. So let's get into a little bit of some of the details. So it was released on November the 7th, 2014. Countries of origin was United States, United Kingdom, and Canada. The language is in English. It was also known, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, recorded under the name Flora's Letter. Location was in Iceland. Production companies, Paramount Pictures, Warner Brothers was in there. Box office, something that I think is interesting. It was budgeted at approximately estimated $165 million. Opening weekend here in the United States and Canada was $47,510.360. That was on November the 9th of 2014. Gross within the United States and Canada was $188,000. Gross worldwide was little over $773,000. And as we mentioned a few minutes ago, this film runs 2 hours and 49 minutes. On Interstellar. Honestly, it's a great film. It's well directed, written very, very well. I love the idea of the fact that it takes a lot of true science, wraps it into this film. The acting is superb. Matt Dillon, one thing we didn't talk about with the Matt Dillon that I thought was very interesting is that nobody knew. He didn't make it any of the premieres. He didn't show up. He wasn't on the billboards, part of the marketing information. Until you saw the film, you didn't even know Matt Damon was in the film. And I thought that was very interesting and a good marketing ploy. And I think that also helped to bring some attention to this as well. But overall, really a outstanding movie. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I highly recommend, if you haven't seen Interstellar, please go out, get a copy of it. It's on DVD. I'm sure it's on the streaming systems out there that you can plug it in, one of the streaming services, and find it. Again, the only thing I would caution you on, and this is not a knock at all, is just that it's so well done and so realistic that for somebody like myself, I honestly had to watch it a couple times because it's just one of those good, powerful movies. It's well written, based on a lot of science, that I had to watch it a couple times to fully grasp it. But I would strongly encourage you to go out, watch this film, and make your own conclusions as well. But another fine film by Christopher Nolan. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Complete Works Podcast. Be sure to like this episode and subscribe. You can find more of my work on Filmbook. That's film-book.com. Just search for Doug Hess or The Complete Works. You can also find me on Twitter or Instagram at HessDoug14. Again, that's HessDoug14. Tune in next time when I review and analyze the next Christopher Nolan film. Thank you for listening, and we will see you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Complete Works. Find more of The Complete Works on Filmbook, on your favorite podcast service, and on YouTube.